from the studios of Farm Journal Broadcast. This is Ag Day.
Kids are heading into the kitchen in Tennessee.
I'm Charles Denny. The hours after school are a great time for kids to learn cooking skills. It's a University of Tennessee Extension program called Adventures in the Kitchen. That story coming up on Ag Day.
Why working on a dairy farm may actually be good for your health. As Senate Ag leaders hear from farmers and ranchers about what they would like in the next farm bill.
The Senate Ag Committee holds a farm bill listening session here in South Dakota. We'll take you there on Ag Day.
But can it get done before the end of the year? The latest right now on Ag Day.
Ag Day, presented by Pioneer. What's next happens when experience meets expertise. Pioneer, what's next happens here.
Good morning, I'm Clinton Griffiths. Can a new farm bill get done by the end of 2024? Some members of the Senate Ag Committee hearing saying yes, and they talked with Ag Day's Michelle Rook at a farm bill listening session recently in South Dakota.
At a farm bill listening session held here in South Dakota, Senate Ag Committee members expressed confidence that they can get the farm bill done yet in 2024, and they want to put more farm back in the farm bill.
Ranking Member John Bozeman told attendees House Ag Committee Chair G.T. Thompson will release the chairman's mark in early May and has resolved the controversial SNAP changes.
What we'd like for him to do is go ahead. We want him to go first, and then the minority side in the Senate, what we will do is come out with a framework very shortly after that. We've pretty much got that done. The idea is just to get a farm bill done this year.
Bozeman says farm bill updates are needed to reflect today's market environment and tighter margins. That's why he and North Dakota Senator John Hoeven introduced the Farmers Act to make crop insurance more affordable.
And what we want to do is change crop insurance a little bit where it helps everyone more, but also is more accessible to some of the regions of the country where they're not able to use it as successfully.
This is something the crop insurance industry says they support because it will replace ad hoc disaster assistance.
There's been about $65 billion that's gone out for ad hoc disaster that really didn't help a lot of our producers.
Senate Ag Committee member John Thune says they also need to put more farm back in the farm bill.
The nutrition title, for example, the climate issues, that's become a big priority for a lot of particularly Democrats on the Ag Committee and more generally in the Senate. When we say that, what we're talking about is those parts of the farm bill that focus on production agriculture.
The reference price increase is something the Soybean Association is pushing for, as the current level is only $8.40 a bushel.
Yeah, reference prices at this time are just well below what they should be. As we've seen back when we had trade wars and whatnot, and we saw a significant decrease in the price of soybeans, we never triggered a loss in terms of those reference prices.
Meanwhile, State Corn Growers President David Ellens told the senators they also want crop insurance preserved, higher reference prices, and updated base acres.
Those base acres are based off data from what our grandpas used to plant. And now that the Corn Belt has moved west and north, we need those to, you know, reflect of what's actually being planted out there.
While this will cost more money, Thune says senators are pushing for updates on reference prices and base acres. And Bozeman thinks they can find the money in the CCC.
I think that's a viable option. A lot of money's being spent in the CCC, a lot of money left over.
But with the farm bill costs estimated at $1.5 trillion over 5 years, they say the changes are a small cost compared to 80% for nutrition programs. And food security is national security. I'm Michelle Rook reporting for Ag Day.
All right, thanks, Michelle. Now Michigan is reporting the detection of avian flu in dairy herds in three additional counties in the state. The Michigan Department of Agriculture and Rural Development says the added counties are in Ionia, Isabella, and Ottawa. That brings the total number of affected counties in the state to 4. Now, the outbreak in Michigan means there are now 29 infected dairy herds in 8 states. You can see the affected states on this map. Michigan's ag director emphasizing the importance of vigilance, noting the virus disregards geographical boundaries. Right now, USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service is urging voluntary testing to gather more information and prevent interstate spread. The organization continues to say HPAI spreads primarily through wild birds. It's encouraging biosecurity measures such as restricting restricting barn access to outsiders to try to prevent transmission through contaminated equipment or materials. Industry leaders continue to say the nation's dairy and milk supply remain safe due to pasteurization of milk. Warmer weather and drier conditions really help farmers make some planting progress. USDA reports right now 6% of the nation's corn crop is planted. That's 1% ahead of the five-year average. And some states really starting to pick up planting, with Missouri 26% planted, way ahead of the five-year average. And we got our first look at the soybean crop, with 3% now planted. That's 2% ahead of average. Arkansas way ahead with 26% now planted. Cotton planting sits at 8%, right on schedule with the five-year average. So how does USDA get those numbers for crop progress? Lance Honig with the USDA Statistics Service says producing the national report every week is a huge undertaking. Now, he says they have about 4,000 reporters they contact each week to fill out the reports. They can include county extension agents and farm service agency folks. They go out and look at crops, checking on planting, emergence, and later in the season, crop conditions, and then send those numbers every Monday morning to USDA.
They're spending time traveling around their county during the week, and they're also in contact with producers in their area. And we've got an individual in here who works very feverishly throughout the afternoon to compile all that data and to get that report together.
And of course, when the report comes out, it always references conditions as of Sunday. Happening right now, the Ag Day weather team is keeping watch on some severe weather that's moving across the central part of the U.S. Meteorologist Matt Engelbrecht joins us with an update.
Yeah, what I really want to focus on the severe weather threat coming up for our Tuesday. We have another strong low pressure system coming through the United States. That means kind of two phases with the severe weather potential. Now, where you see that red, that's where our severe weather threat is located, at least the highest chance of seeing anything on this list, possibly multiple threats within this bullseye. Where you see the red, that's Iowa, Missouri, Illinois. A few tornadoes will be possible, damaging winds, large hail, and of course some heavier rain. As you get more into the yellow and the green, that does not mean severe weather threat is zero. It just means the likelihood of seeing these threats goes down a little bit. Highest chance is going to be right in the red. Again, that's a severe weather threat coming up for our Tuesday. In just a little bit, we'll go ahead and take a look at how the jet stream is responding, this low pressure system is responding, and what that means coming up for our Wednesday. And we asked you on the Ag Day Facebook page last week to share pictures of your animals as part of National Pet Day. We thought this one was really cute. Jay, sending this in from Texas, sharing a photo of one of his favorite passengers. So cute. And the best part, restrained, so make sure they are okay in that golf cart. We'll talk more about your extended forecast coming up in just a bit.
The drought concerns at the Panama Canal may soon be coming to an end. Officials say recent rainfall in the area has provided some relief, and the Panama Canal Authority is cautiously optimistic about returning to normal operations by the year 2025, although they say that depends on weather conditions. And they're hoping La Nina conditions will bring cooler temperatures and increased precipitation. There's been a significant shift in the feedstock landscape for biomass-based diesel fuel. That's according to FarmDoc. Researchers with the University of Illinois say there's a growing dominance of renewable diesel production over biodiesel, and that's changing feedstock preferences. The ag economists noting a recent shift away from soybean oil toward tallow and the longer-term shift toward yellow grease and corn oil. They say it makes sense given the relatively low carbon intensity scores given to renewable diesel made from those feedstocks in the California Low Carbon Fuel Standard program. Lower CI scores translate into higher dollar credit values per gallon. And the researchers say more than 80% of the renewable diesel produced in the U.S. is consumed in California. New numbers show U.S. ag's continuing to make progress when it comes to cutting emissions. The EPA just released its annual estimate of all man-made greenhouse gas emissions sources here in the U.S. It shows that U.S. ag represents just under 10% of total U.S. emissions. And while total U.S. greenhouse gas emissions increased from 2021 to 2022 by 1.3%, ag emissions actually dropped by nearly 2%, and that's the largest decrease of any economic sector seen here in red. The American Farm Bureau credits the success to the continued importance of voluntary, market, and incentive-based conservation practices. And it says 2022 marks the lowest U.S. ag greenhouse gas emissions since 2012. Well, Monday was a big start to the week for the cattle market. We'll have more on what sent markets into the green coming up next. And later, instead of asking mom what's for dinner, these kids are learning to make their own meals in the country.
Ag Day is brought to you by Germinator Closing Wheels. Germinator Steel Closing Wheels provides a 13 bushel advantage per acre in no-till and a 7 bushel advantage per acre in conventional. Do you have enough room in your bin to switch to the Germinator?
Grains suffered some losses to start the week, while the cattle market saw some big gains. Michelle Murphy is back with more in Markets Now.
Grains all ending lower on Monday. Randy Mertensen, Mertensen Ag, is joining us. And Randy, you know, we had a nice pop on Friday. Looked like some short covering activity in the grains, but did we just see profit taking, or was this weather?
I think it could be both. I mean, you know, we are seeing an improvement as far as the weather is concerned. The 1 to 5 day forecast is calling for some decent rains for the northern plains, for the western Corn Belt. You know, that's some of the areas that really need it, especially the western Corn Belt. So I think weather is playing a little bit of a part in it. You look at your 6 to 10, we're looking at a little bit drier conditions with, you know, possibility of seeing some, you know, cooler temperatures, but probably be able to get some planting going again. But I think that's a lot of it. But I think we're also seeing a little profit taking here today, or at least some fun seller farmers selling, which is helping to put some pressure on the market.
Yeah, we saw that at the end of February, where we had to price or roll all these basis fixed contracts. Are we going to see the same scenario, or at least to that degree, here at the end of this month?
I think we will. I mean, there's still a lot of corn sitting out in the farmers' hands, and I know there was quite a few producers that, you know, were, you know, stringing out their delivery points, you know, whether it be March, whether it be May, and locking in the basis, waiting for futures to move a little bit. That hasn't really happened a lot. I mean, we've got a little bit of appreciation, but not a lot. And I think producers are now looking at, they need the cash, they need to move the product. And one, you know, the other part is that they're going to start getting busy in the field, so they need to get the grain moved and out of their, you know, get one task taken care of.
We did look like we were putting some work premium into the grain market on Friday, and so maybe taking that out on Monday.
I think that was part of it. You know, we did see the markets perform fairly well. And again, I don't know, if it seems like at the end of every week we want to try to leave the with very small changes from the previous week. But I do think that the good bump on Friday had something to do with the idea that there was going to be an attack imminent coming from Iran to Israel. The fact that it really didn't amount to much, I think, and the fact that a lot of countries now are telling Israel, back away, let's not see this escalate anymore, I think that's kind of taking some of the wind out of the grain markets and taking some of that war premium out.
Thanks so much, Randy Mertensen with Mertensen Ag. We'll have more Ag Day coming up.
Watch Markets Now with Michelle Rook on the Farm Journal YouTube channel, keeping you updated throughout the day on the markets at the open, midday, and close. Find out what moved the markets today and what to expect the market to do next.
Yeah, we'll look at what's going on regarding that severe weather potential. But you remember, earlier we looked at that bullseye back into Missouri, Iowa, and Illinois. And you can see why. Now, this yellow doesn't look like much, but it's within there that we could have the possibility of a few tornadoes. It could hail, heavy rain, as well as some strong gusty winds. This is Tuesday at 3 p.m. As that sun starts to set, this system is going to try and wash itself out. But all along this line here, you may get the threat for some stronger wind gusts or even an isolated tornado or two. This is Tuesday at 8 p.m. We still have our Wednesday that is going to shift the severe weather chances over here towards the east, and that includes Ohio, possibly into Kentucky and Pennsylvania, Wednesday into Wednesday afternoon, Wednesday night, before everything starts to come to an end by early Thursday morning. Now, that being said, this is Thursday at 8 a.m. Low pressure system, and that's going to exit off to the east and to the northeast. Check out the blue showing up, not quite done with the snow in and across the United States. I expect colder than average conditions going into the weekend compared to what we're going to have this week. And that's not just one or two states. That's a good portion of the United States. So double check that forecast, especially if you're thinking about planting or you have planted, because there are going to be some colder temperatures coming through just in time for the weekend. The other part of this, the wind forecast Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. It got purple all across parts of Minnesota, Wisconsin, and back into Illinois, Missouri, and off here towards the west as well. Now, this is Tuesday at 4 p.m. Put this into motion. You can get a sense of where that low pressure system is located, the surface low, back in here towards the plains, working off to the east. Sibley, Illinois. Now, you got some evening thunderstorms at 80 degrees for a high. Taftville, Connecticut, sunny, high around 67 degrees, low of 40 degrees. And Carbon, Wyoming, high of 58 degrees.
Working on a dairy farm may actually be good for your health. We'll have some interesting research coming up. Plus, kids head into the kitchen for some cooking 101, thanks to help from extension agents in the country. A 109-year-old dairy business has filed for bankruptcy. Oberwise Dairy is based in North Aurora, Illinois. The 109-year-old business delivers milk in glass bottles and has nearly 40 ice cream and dairy stores in both Illinois and Missouri. It filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection in federal court in Chicago. It listed more than $4 million in debt. It was started by Peter Oberwise, a dairy farmer himself who started selling milk from the back of a horse-drawn wagon in 1915. The company is owned by the family of former Illinois State Senator Jim Oberwise. He also ran for U.S. Senate and governor, but lost in the Republican primary. Dairy producers do everything they can to keep their cows healthy, and in turn, their cows may be helping the farmers' health too. The Mansfield Clinic Research Institute in Wisconsin recently taking a look at the gut health of the state's dairy producers. Now, that study looked at the health of dairy farm workers from exposure to their cows and manure. The researchers used nasal swabs and fecal samples to look at bacteria, fungi, and viruses that are naturally found in our bodies. They found the nasal microbiome of central Wisconsin dairy producers was similar to those they find in the cows' noses, but was significantly different from non-farmers in their same area. They also say the farmers had increased levels of beneficial bacteria that can help prevent sinus infections. When looking at gut microbiomes, cows and their humans were more diverse, but farmers had increased levels of two beneficial bacteria, one that works as a probiotic and another that helps maintain normal function. Kids grabbing a quick snack doesn't mean it has to be unhealthy, and they may even be able to make it themselves. We head into the kitchen in the country next. Hours after the school bell rings can still be a time for students to learn, and that includes in the kitchen. As Charles Denny of the University of Tennessee reports, Extension is helping students make their own meals and snacks.
The school day may technically be over, but here the learning still happens as the afternoon goes on. Add to it, supper is approaching. Breakfast for supper, to be exact. Here at Doss Middle School in Hendersonville, the classroom subject is food prep.
Conversions from using cups of like flour to like how many cups of water you need.
Their homework done, these kids in the Doss Unity Learning Center now focus on omelets. It's part of a UT Extension after school program called Adventures in the Kitchen, where these young chefs are learning a number of recipes.
We made French toast, which was really good. That's my favorite. And we made like a chocolate fondue, yeah, with some fruits, strawberry, banana, and a pretzel stick, and marshmallows too.
The Alisea twins like to cook at home and believe it's important for kids to learn how to make their own meals.
Yes, because it like teaches me to be more responsible and independent in myself, so then when I grow up, I already know how to make something quick and healthy.
There are also school subjects involved here. Following a recipe improves reading comprehension and teaches math. And when you get a child in a kitchen, it also promotes healthier eating.
And it gives them ownership. So we talk about My Plate and the different food groups and portion control and food safety.
Family and Consumer Sciences agent Jenny Biggs tells us when a young person creates something in the kitchen, it's a self-worth boost and a chance to try new foods.
while they may not have been willing to try something if somebody else served it to them, the fact that they made it and they put the energy into it, they were excited to try their finished product and found out that they enjoyed it.
A few successful omelets created, it's time to taste test what we've made. Our children need their academics, but life skills too. Cooking is a skill and a necessity. And now with these kids, a learned behavior. This is Charles Denny reporting.
All right, thanks, Charles. And that's all the time we have this morning. We're sure glad you tuned in. From all of us here at Ag Day, I'm Clinton Grimes. Have a great day.